The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, here we are trying to do a radio show, and they keep voting for a speaker of the house. Like we've got nothing else going on.
Or not voting for
a speaker. I should say not voting for a speaker of the house. Well, they have voted. They just have not voted for Mike Johnson. I should say the vast majority of Republicans have voted for Mike Johnson.
Yeah.
All of the Democrats, apparently, that are in session have voted for Hakeem Jeffries, but he's not going to be the speaker. So it's those other three right now who we are watching to see what exactly do they want out of this. Are they just trying to send a message? Because that could be what's going on here. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry. Three Republicans have dissented and not voted for Mike Johnson for Speaker of the House. So here on 97.1, that is, of course, something that we cover very, very heavily because we talk about politics quite a bit. I don't know if you ever tuned into the station.
The three that dissented, I know Massey and then the guy from North Carolina. What was his name again?
Let me tell you real quick. It was Norman was from South Carolina.
South Carolina.
And then the third one is the one that happened while we were doing other things. That it really wasn't a big deal at that point because we knew he had lost that round.
Another one.
It was just another person. But it was only one more. And that was, let me see, Mike Johnson, it was Norman, it was Massey, and it was, oh, by the way, Chip Roy voted for Mike Johnson.
Okay.
So he was not the dissenter. I had that guy's name, and I just lost it. But it was somebody that, was it Tom Emmer? I think it was.
Tom Emmer.
It was Thomas Massey voted for Tom Emmer, and I think Tom Emmer and this Norman guy voted for
Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan.
Okay.
So that's your three.
Well, that's interesting, too, because the Ukrainian immigrant representative out of Indiana, she was, last
Victoria
I heard.
Victoria Sparks.
Yeah, Victoria Sparks was a no, last I heard. So that means she must have voted yes.
She also voted yes. So, yeah, it's interesting in this moment because there's a lot of, as we watch, you know, most of the House members are still there on the floor. I mean, this is like, I mean, C-SPAN's boring. I get it.
Yes.
But watching it happen, you know, in these moments, it's not.
It's interesting, too, because I was mentioning off air, you could see body language and you could figure out who's, like, stressed out about this, who's not. And nobody, to me, looks panicked.
No, I don't either, except for Mike Johnson.
Mike Johnson looked frustrated.
Now, when that vote came through, he was sitting there and he basically, you know, gave out a puff of smoke, stood up, buttoned his jacket, and started walking. He did not look like he was happy, but I don't know what his strategy is now. My assumption is that he goes and talks to the three.
Yes.
Or he grabs a couple people who are friends with the three and says, all of us, come on, let's go in a room, let's talk, what do you need? The question, though, is what is Thomas Massey looking to get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
What is Tom Emmer looking to get out of this? What is Norman, this other guy, I can give you his first name. It's Ralph Norman from South Carolina. What are they looking to get? Are they just doing a protest vote? Because if they are, what we're going to see is a pretty quick return to the House floor, is my assumption.
Yeah.
Talk things through. Maybe they take a lunch break, whatever. They come back probably within the next hour or two, and they vote again, and Mike Johnson becomes the Speaker of the House. And they just vent their frustrations and say, I just wanted to get that out and let you know, here's what I want in the future.
Yeah.
And then they go, okay, well, we'll move on. Yeah, Thomas Massey probably still a no, but he would be Speaker.
I've heard that they've negotiated like chairman seats before in the past. There's just all sorts of things that could be negotiated to get the votes.
And my hope is that's not the case because that's
petty.
Petty, and it's selfish. But we'll see. That's one option. The other is that these guys are going to stick no. And Mike Johnson then would not be able to become the Speaker of the House unless Democrats decided to vote for him. And they're not going to do it because they like making all this this hay. So just a few notes here that have broken since we started covering this at the beginning of last hour. I'm sorry, I said it was Tom Emmer. It was Keith Self. That Tom Emmer was one of the vote getters. Keith Self voted for Byron Donalds.
I was going to say, so Emmer voting would have been like,
My apologies.
He's the whip.
He's the third one. Keith Self would have been the third one. Again, these are names not really heard of. But there apparently were protest votes or protests breaking out a bit on the House floor because American Samoa is not allowed a vote in the House. So I think they already knew that. But
did they do a haka? I hope they did.
I have no idea. And the Chip Roy thing was, you know, more breaking news. So there's going to be a second ballot. What happens, we don't know. We'll be covering it live. But here's a little bit of audio to kind of catch you up on the day. So first, at just before we went on at noon, well, technically, we started at 11 today because we knew that this was going to happen at a, you know, somewhere in the 11 o'clock hour. And then it really didn't officially start till close to noon when we normally go on. And Representative Lisa McCann gave a nominating speech for Johnson that went like this.
On November 5th, the American people gave us a great opportunity to get America back on the right track. They gave us an opportunity to get back to normal and to get back to the real issues that the country faces right now. People want the opportunity to take care of their families. They simply want to provide for their children and give them a prosperous future. And ladies and gentlemen, we have the opportunity today to do just that. We have an opportunity to take our country back. With Speaker Mike Johnson, Senate Majority Leader John Thune, and President Donald J. Trump in charge, we have the opportunity to put America first again.
That was Lisa McCann. She's a Republican from Michigan. She was giving the nominating speech. I actually really enjoy watching this process play out. This is American democracy. I mean, this is the stuff that you watch people in parliament in other countries and you go, oh, that's how they do it. Oh, this is watching our own. This is how we do it. And watching these speeches was one of those things that we kind of went back and forth. Should we, you know, like I said, we were here in the 11 o'clock hour. Should we break into Kilmeade and carry these speeches? We decided not to, but there were some good moments from them. After listening to the Democrats nominate Hakeem Jeffries, Brad came in and goes, man, I'm really glad we didn't carry that speech because it was a bunch of nonsense. But it was the kind of thing that inflames. You go, like the stuff, oh, we just wanted to bring down prices. We're just here for the American people. And you're like, I think that you are speaking directly through your front teeth when you say that.
Yeah, it's like an entourage. So they're panning the camera around there, and Speaker Johnson walked out, and there was like seven or eight people following him in a line. So I don't know where they were going, if they're going
to
another
room. So he's back
on
the floor.
Yeah, he was back on the floor. He was down by where the gavel is and all that other stuff. And then this was in the back of the room, and so it looked like he was walking out.
Oh, he's walking back out. Okay, so they're still doing meetings. When that nominating speech for Hakeem Jeffries happened, we're sitting here listening to it going, come on, give me a freaking break. Like, you're going to continue. You just
only
lost an election.
One.
You
like,
lost
stop.
Every chamber. And yet you're going to continue to tell people, well, this is just what we've been trying to do. Democrat, you know, they've had basically everything but the House, and they had the House 2 years ago. And they're like, this is what we're trying to do.
Mr. Clerk, today I rise on behalf of the governing majority of the House of Representatives. The American people have sent a strong message that they want their elected leaders working together.
Yeah, this is just we're the adults in the room.
Absolutely.
These Republicans, how dare they dissent?
This is the political play you got to make if you're the Democrat.
But this is Pete Aguilar, Democrat from California, continuing.
To tackle the affordability crisis, there is only one leader in this chamber with a track record of compromise, conviction, and compassion. There is only one leader who understands the needs of the working people and has lived the American dream himself.
And that is Hakeem Jeffries.
You got to be careful saying you understand the needs of the working people.
You tell me about
it. And you watch what you did to the working people over
tell
the last 4 years.
Tell me about it. That's what I was screaming at my TV watching this thing.
And is committed to ensuring its promise for future generations. There is only one leader who knows how to negotiate a bipartisan deal and then stick to that deal. Democrats are united behind the most powerful legislative leader in this chamber, Hakeem Jeffries of Brooklyn.
Now, the only thing that I agree with in there is that they are united.
Yes.
Behind Hakeem Jeffries, there have been people saying, yeah, because there's nothing at stake. You know, there's nothing really that they're going to be able to do. So, of course, they unite behind somebody just to basically as a protest vote. But that's what we're watching right now. If you're just tuning in, we're watching this speaker vote play out. The first one's done. Johnson did not get it. But not a lot of dissent. So three votes. And now what happens? I got some audio I want to play here for you that is something really out of left field. I didn't know that this was a possibility today. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that in a second. But like you said, Brad, as we watch the body language of these representatives on the floor, now some of these might be Democrats and they're just having a good time.
Yeah.
This is a party day for them. But the Republicans don't look, of the ones that I've seen, they don't really look like they're under a lot of duress here.
Well, just before the scene we switched off of just there, it was a representative speaking to Thomas Massie. And Thomas Massie and that guy, they were laughing. So I don't think that there's a lot of animosity. So, I mean, I wish we kind of knew what they were demanding or if we could get into the room where it happens. But
yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be the thing is that right now, it seems as if those meetings are probably happening. Mm-hmm. Thomas Massie's still on the floor, though. So my guess is that he's going to be a no. He's just going to stay no.
What does he want? Not Mike Johnson.
He's,
but that's okay if you can get the other two.
So the other two are this guy Self and Norman. Norman from South Carolina. Self, where was he from? I can't remember if I even said, but these are names that we're not really familiar with. Maybe they become names that we're familiar with. Self, Keith Self is his name, GOP on side, of course. But what happens? Are they in meetings right now? That's what we'll find out. And that's why it's fun to cover, you know, a big live event like this happening, which we get to do today. And thank you for tuning in. And keep it here if you want to know what's happening minute by minute, because stuff like this, you know, yeah, you can tune into Fox, but you're not going to hear your local representative, Eric Burleson, talking about what may happen next. In such a way as we've got audio here. Now, Eric Burleson is a Missouri House rep.
Yep.
He is from the 7th District, which is down near Springfield. Here is a possibility of if this isn't, you know, like I said, this is just a protest vote, we're going to come back pretty quick and Mike Johnson will be the speaker.
Yeah, this was from this morning with Mark Cox.
Okay, this is Eric Burleson.
If it doesn't happen by the second round, I think the dam is going to break and then people will quickly... we'll regroup, and I don't think that we will get past January 6th without a speaker. I think that we will probably, you know, if Johnson falters, I think Trump will step in and say, okay, I get it. Here's the next guy. I'm getting behind, and then we'll go from there.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Would you catch that right there? And he's on the House floor right now, so maybe this is part of the discussion. Don't know. We'll have to see. But what he just said there was, if we get past this second round, this one's the key.
Mm-hmm.
This next one. If Mike Johnson is not elected Speaker of the House in this next vote, which we don't know when it's going to be, watching it live, Trump could step in and endorse somebody else. Who? We don't know.
Don't know.
We have no idea.
And as Hans von Spakovsky has said before, it doesn't even have to be a member of the House.
Thank you for
it
that reminder.
It could be anybody.
As we've discussed in a YouTube live chat poll in the past,
mm-hmm.
could it be Elon Musk?
I have my doubts about that.
I do too, but it's been kicked around.
Let me throw another name out there that might surprise you, and this just came to me. What about Laura Trump? She's resigned as head of the RNC. She pulled her name out of the ring or out of the running for the mm-hmm. replacing
for
Rubio.
Senate.
So if she wants to stay in politics, being a Speaker of the House and having that last name Trump might be powerful.
The big question is, did they have this contingency in mind?
Maybe. Who knows? I'm just speculating.
Or did they not know either?
That just popped into my head. So.
Because we, as of an hour ago, we had no idea what was going to happen. We still don't really. But they were talking about up to 27 Republicans that could dissent. They were also talking about it could just be one. It ended up being three. So that's not a lot. it's very possible that we could have a Speaker Johnson before the end of this show, even by the time Mark Reardon takes over at 3. Or if not, man, what's going to happen? Could Donald Trump speak in, like Eric Burleson was just saying, step in and say, here's who I'm throwing my weight behind now? And then, wow, because all this has to happen by Monday, you guys, for there to be a new Congress and them to certify the electoral votes. So, wow. Didn't know it'd be like this. I guess that's why we're covering it, is because you just never know. But it seems like they didn't even know. So we'll see. This is Ryan Wiggins. Fun day here, I guess, filling in for Annie Fry. And she will be back on Monday. The whole team will be back on Monday. But right now, it is just us, the Manny Fry Show. We're going to come back, excuse me, and do a little bit of catching up on what we missed this week with Brad, some clips that he pulled. So stick around. We'll be right back. We've been following the House Speaker vote all day. There still is no House Speaker, but the fact that they have not left the floor indicates to me that they have not adjourned and that we're going to see something pretty quick here. So we'll keep following it and we'll let you know. A lot of movement happening at the moment. I haven't mentioned the YouTube live chat poll much today, and this is Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry, by the way. YouTube live chat poll is, what will prices on the essentials do this year? So you can define the essentials as however you want. If you're a car guy, maybe cars are an essential to you. I would guess that groceries are a part of that, no matter who you are, because we all eat. But whatever the essentials are, what do you think the prices of those things are going to do this year? Few options for you. Go up? Will they stay the same? Will they go down a little, or will they go down a lot? Those are the four choices that you have. Kind of eager to see what you think, because this is almost like a consumer sentiment poll in a way going into 2025 to see what you got. Any thoughts about this poll?
Yeah, I do. My thoughts, if I were to vote, what I would vote is stay the same. Maybe you'll see energy prices go down. I think you can get energy prices to go down, but that's the thing about inflation. Once inflation goes up and drives prices up, very rarely does it go down. To get inflation to go down, you need a negative inflation rate.
Yeah, deflation.
Yeah, and I don't know that I've ever seen that.
It rarely happens that we see deflation. I think this is a situation where you might, because we've had so much inflation for so long. In fact, you had such massive inflation so quickly for the first 2 years of Biden's term and into the third year, that's when you historically would see a slight deflation. And you never even got close to it.
No.
You continued to see inflation.
The best we had was like, oh, we're down to 3% inflation.
Yeah, and I mean, like, maybe to 2.5, you know, very briefly. And these are numbers that you're like, can I even trust the numbers that these people are giving me? Because they're all political. But you never saw it really get low at all. Those are just like historically normal numbers. And that's when you really should have seen them dip to deflation if things were going well, if they had handled it well, which they didn't. So it's possible that we would see that. On this vote, you're right, Brad. Going down a lot, I just don't see ever happening, because even if you do have some negative price, and negative being good in this sense, you would see it just go down a little bit. That's actually what I think is going to happen. I think you'll see prices just barely tick down. It might not be big things, but on little things you might notice, oh, that's eased up a little bit. And that's it.
What's interesting is that sometimes prices dropping by a lot is accompanied by not good financial situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would get a recession or something like that, and then that would just rip the bottom out and prices would start falling. I still think that the biggest thing that will have an impact on this will be energy prices. And if you can lower the energy prices enough, then you can start competition, and grocers and all these other people start competing with one another again. It's like, well, I've got room to drop my prices, so if I can get your customers, I will make up in quantity what I was losing in quality.
And that's why I'm kind of balanced right between stay the same and go down a little, is for that very reason, that the companies have really, especially retail and manufacturers, have stretched themselves so much in the last few years to try to, their margins are down. I mean, the company's margins, and I'm not talking about NASDAQ and Dow Jones. I'm not talking about big companies. I'm talking about like on the one product that this company makes. They're making less profit on that product because they've had to stretch so much. That's why you see shrinkflation too, because they're trying to make it work. Well, if it gets eased up on them a little bit, which would happen from energy prices, and I'm thinking groceries there mainly, that if energy prices go down, they'll finally have some breathing room. Does that mean prices go up? Definitely not. Does that mean they stay the same? Probably. They could tick down a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is why my vote is go down a little bit. But you can vote in this. It's the YouTube live chat poll. What will prices on the essentials do this year? Interesting note here as we're covering the speaker vote. I wasn't expecting that. Mike Johnson is back on the floor, and he was just doing a one-on-one with Hakeem Jeffries a second ago. I don't really know what that means. Like, what does Mike Johnson have to talk about with Hakeem Jeffries? Are they going back to a vote? That would be my guess, that they're saying, hey, here's the plan. You're the minority leader. I'm the majority leader. Let's come together here. Here's the plan for the rest of the day. That's my guess. But that could mean that they're going to adjourn. That could also mean that they're coming to come right back. Don't know. We're watching. It doesn't look like people are leaving. So my guess is that we're going to do another vote here soon, but that's just me pontificating. In the meantime, Brad does a segment on Fridays called What Did I Miss?
What did I miss?
What did I miss?
All right, so this week was a little bit difficult because I missed a lot, and usually it's what did Annie miss? And Annie's not here, but also I wasn't here. So what I ended up doing was I went into Mark Cox's folder, and I pulled some of the audio that he was talking about over the past week and some of the stuff they were talking about, and I brought that over. So I'm not 100% sure what all these clips are, but I thought we could play them.
Oh, this will be fun.
Play them and discuss. So the first one I want to talk about is this one here from Jan Crawford. She's a CNN legal expert.
I'll go back to the court. I think that Donald Trump will probably get his fourth nomination to the Supreme Court either this year or maybe next year.
Because someone retires.
Justice Sam Alito. He was nominated, took the bench in 2006 after nearly two decades on the court.
Wow.
What do you think? You think Sam Alito will be the next person to retire?
I haven't heard his name a lot. I always hear Clarence Thomas.
I hear Clarence Thomas a lot more because he's been in there a lot longer.
You know who I would like to see retire?
Sonia Sotomayor. No.
Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Yeah.
If those three just decided, you know what?
It's not worth it.
2025 is my year. I'm going to step down. I know, especially for Ketanji Brown Jackson.
I'm pursuing Broadway.
I haven't been here for more than about a year, but I think I've seen what I need to see. If those three wanted to step away, that'd be okay. But I guess if you're Alito or Thomas, having the Senate, having the presidency, you know, these guys, they're smarter than to just step away during a Democrat term. So I could see that.
I mean, of those two, I would have thought it would have been Clarence Thomas before. But also, Clarence Thomas, that legal mind, you hate to lose it.
Alito too, though.
Yeah, both of those guys are very conservative, very constitutionalist.
Of the three appointments that Trump has already made, which would be... who was the first one?
Gorsuch.
His name was eluding me. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh.
And then...
Amy Coney Barrett.
Thank you. Hosting a show. Of the three, who do you think has been the best, the most constitutional, I should say?
I would say all three of them have made decisions that I disagreed with. And it's interesting because they're all three supposed to be pretty constitutional, but they disagreed on certain areas. It happens. This is the way the court is. I want to lean Gorsuch has been the best, but even then, he's made a decision where I'm like, what? Why? Why? But
yeah, I like Gorsuch. I look to find, you know, if those two guys, because it's ain't John Roberts, but
he's not one of Trump's appointees.
No, he's not. But if Alito and Thomas or one of the two step down, you know, they're kind of the leading real constitutional, conservative, traditional thought leaders on the court. If both of them were to step down, I would hope that Gorsuch would become that. He is very principled.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the other ones aren't. Even the liberal ones, you know, have principles of their own.
Yeah.
But Gorsuch seems to really have a bedrock understanding of the Constitution that I think some of the decisions that you may be thinking of that I'm thinking of too.
He made it on a constitutional decision.
He will disagree with them and still make them because they're constitutional.
That's what the Constitution says.
And I really respect that. I used to think that about John Roberts too, but then he's been that kind of middle. He's sided with the majority of conservatives a lot recently, but it looks to me like he's more interested in preserving the integrity of the perception of the court than the Constitution. Well,
what's interesting about him too is so the way it works in the Supreme Court, the ranking member gets to write the decision. And so if the conservatives vote one way, the ranking member is Clarence Thomas, unless Justice Roberts does it. So what Justice Roberts can do on those opinions is moderate them a little bit. So I think that's why you see him, like, he's like, well, we're gonna lose this one, I'm gonna go ahead and jump on board with these guys anyway, and then that way he gets to write the opinion,
so, and it looks like a bigger majority.
Yeah, and it may not be as hard line as say a Clarence Thomas or Sam Alito would have written.
Any other ones you want to hit here?
Yeah, I've got this one here. This is Trump's reaction to the passing of, well, it's not Donald Trump, it's Fox reading his reaction, but to the passing of Jimmy Carter.
I just heard about the news about the passing of President Jimmy Carter. Those of us who have been fortunate to have served as president understand this is a very exclusive club, and only we can relate to the enormous responsibility of leading the greatest nation in history. The challenges Jimmy faced as president came at a pivotal time for our country, and he did everything in his power to improve the lives of all Americans. For that, we all owe him a debt of gratitude. Melania and I are thinking warmly of the Carter family and their loved ones during this difficult time. We urge everyone to keep them in their hearts and prayers.
I don't know. I was glad to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, you never know what you're going to get with Trump.
No.
And that's part of the fun. But in this moment, you're like, yeah, you know, just...
That had the same feel as his reaction whenever Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away.
Yeah, I agree.
So...
It does look like there's something happening on the floor. We're going to go live and just dip in and see what's going on. A lot of applause. So.
And the Honorable Tom Emmer of the state of Minnesota has received one. Therefore, the Honorable Mike Johnson of the state of Louisiana, having received a majority of the votes cast, is duly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives for the 119th Congress.
Wow.
So it sounds like the two no votes switched.
They just switched over.
And Massey voted for Emmer, so Emmer received one, so Massey kept his no.
So they've not done another full vote. They just switched their votes. Mike Johnson just shaking hands right now. He has been elected Speaker of the House.
The clerk appoints the following committee to escort the Speaker-elect to the chair. The gentleman from Louisiana, Mr. Scalise. The gentleman from New York, Mr. Jeffries. The gentleman from Minnesota, Mr. Emmer. The gentlewoman from Massachusetts, Ms. Clark. The gentlewoman from Michigan, Mrs. McLean. The gentleman from California, Mr. Aguilar. The gentleman from North Carolina, Mr. Hudson. The gentleman from California, Mr. Liu. The gentleman from Oklahoma, Mr. Hearn. The gentleman from Colorado, Mr. Neguse. The gentleman from Utah, Mr. Moore. The gentlewoman from Washington, Ms. DelBene. The gentlewoman from Indiana, Mrs. Houchin. The gentleman from New York, Mr. Morelli. The gentleman from Pennsylvania, Mr. Reschenthaler. The gentlewoman from Michigan, Mrs. Dingell, and the members of the Louisiana delegation, Mr. Higgins, Ms. Letlow, Mr. Carter, and Mr. Fields.
All right, we're going to break in here because it's just reading names, but yeah, Mike Johnson, I mean, this took us by surprise. We didn't see this. They didn't do another whole vote, and Mike Johnson got two of those three to switch over. Keith Self and Ralph Norman, apparently, have switched to yes votes on Johnson, so he is the next Speaker of the House for the near future. Thomas Massey, still the holdout. We're going to hit a quick break here and come right back because there's going to be more about this. I expect Johnson's going to speak, so we'll carry this live right here on 97.1. A wild day here on a Friday on the Annie Fry Show. Ryan Wiggins, Brad Range are your hosts today, filling in for Annie, who will be back on Monday. We have just seen something that I didn't even know was possible. This is the kind of Hans von Spakovsky stuff.
Yeah, no kidding.
You go, hypothetically, could two people vote against the speaker and then just change their mind?
Before, like, how is this vote certified? When is it final? All of this other stuff.
Exactly. Because, you know, there's all these protocols for person gets up and reads, here's how everybody voted, and they do the roll call. They yell out, well, how are you voting? So I didn't know that this was possible. Apparently it is, that two of the representatives that voted against Mike Johnson have switched to Mike Johnson. He is now going to be the Speaker of the House once again, as he currently is. Keith Self and Ralph Norman have gotten some airtime today.
Yeah.
They made themselves known.
Apparently they got something, some sort of concession.
I don't know. You knew when we were doing that last segment to look up and you see Mike Johnson walk up to Hakeem Jeffries. Okay, yeah. Something's happening. Either they're getting ready to adjourn or they're going to go
vote
again.
What we saw was what the Chiron says is late vote switches propelled Johnson to speakership.
So he's got it. So there you go. It's been kind of a wild run here for the last 2+ hours, but it is done. So we think from listening to the coverage here that Fox News says that Hakeem Jeffries will have to speak, and then he'll have to, I guess,
pass the gavel
over, which is weird because he doesn't have it now.
Yeah.
So I don't know why he has to pass the gavel over. But then Johnson will speak. And if that is during our show, we will carry that for you. I imagine that Mark Reardon will carry it or cover it for you anyway, regardless of when that happens. But I do believe that'll happen today. Otherwise, just watching for this winter weather coming in. If you are tuning in now and you didn't hear Dave Murray back at the middle of the 12 o'clock hour, the latest that he told us is that, yes, we're going to get some weather. He always says you really got to wait till these things hit the Rocky Mountains to determine much. And this storm system has not done that yet.
Right.
It is just now entering, I guess, landfall on the West Coast is what he said last hour. And so it is a big system. It looks like it's going to leave us with some wintry mix, depending on where you're at. That if you're south, I mean, he was this specific.
Yeah.
That if you're south of St. Louis, that you're going to get a little bit more sleet and ice and freezing rain that will turn into snow later on Sunday. If you are north of St. Louis, and this is within our listening area,
right.
So not like Chicago,
yeah,
but
right.
This is right here, that if you're north of downtown St. Louis, that you're going to see a little more snow than wintry mix. Now, I asked him, are you that confident in knowing right where that line is, you know? And he said, you know, it can move, but that line is going to be that close to us, which you said before, like, yeah, we're always on the line, aren't
we? We're always on the line.
You love winter weather, though.
I do like driving in it. I like snow. I actually, honestly, I like the silence of snow. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. You're out there listening, but for some reason, and I think it probably has something to do with the snowflakes falling and the it being on the ground. It creates almost like a soundproofing for the air, and you can just go outside and you can sit and you don't hear anything, which is a really cool, really fascinating thing for me. It actually brings me a lot of peace.
Absolutely. That'll happen starting, he said, late Saturday night. So if you have Saturday night plans, probably shouldn't be affected. But most things happening on Sunday, you know, I've heard about some trade shows and some wedding shows from people around here that
Sunday
are going
service.
On Sunday. Sunday service. Actually, I'm supposed to serve on Sunday, so I wonder what that's going to be. I was supposed to teach Sunday school.
Now you're not that far away.
I wonder what that'll look like. Monday morning, of course, will be difficult too, but we're just watching that just like everybody else, and we're watching the speaker vote. So this has been a pretty crazy day here, filling in for Annie here on the Annie Fry Show, who will be back on Monday. What does this mean for the Trump agenda? Having Johnson in there is clearly what Donald Trump wanted.
Yes.
It's what the vast majority of Republicans wanted in the House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd say the loudest voices get the most attention on these things. And I'm listening.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not opposed to the fact that there was a bit of a protest here.
I respect it.
I respect it in the sense that I like that people are saying, look, we're not just going to fall in line. And my hope is that this is all about the budget.
Mm. Yeah.
Because this is a time in American history that you don't get very often, that you have got to not just do the conservative version of a big budget.
Right.
You have to change the way that you're thinking about spending money in Washington, D.C., because you have to change the way you're thinking about doing everything in Washington, D.C. right now. And I'm glad to see there's a little bit of pushback and saying that's what we want.
I'll tell you what would be interesting. Like, I feel like if we got a Congress that went back to the ways that it used to be, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, or even before that, the way that the founders envisioned, that would be such a radical shock to the D.C. system that I think there would be a lot of protesting from the other side. But I think Americans seeing the way the Constitution and the government functioning the way it was designed to function would be something that I would find refreshing.
The House is getting a lot of attention today. Trump has been making statements, as he does. We've seen him be president before, where he may not get everything he wants. But I want to play this clip from what he said at America Fest. This was probably about a week and a half ago now.
It was not given for the benefit of others by a token of cooperation, but it was given to Panama and to the people of Panama, but it has provisions. You got to treat us fairly, and they haven't treated us fairly. If the principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America in full, quickly, and without question. I'm not going to stand for it.
What do you think about that, Ryan? Do you think that, like, I heard this and I hear a lot of people screaming about, should Donald Trump get the Panama Canal back? Do we have a right? This is actually Panamanian property, blah, 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 all of this other stuff. Have you ever thought about that? Like, what? Why would that be so important or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, with the trade routes, I mean, my assumption was when I heard him say this, is that A, he's going for position here. Mm-hmm. He may not get the Panama Canal back, in his words, but that he's, what I love is, with most of these things, he's thinking about American interests and shipping, and he's thinking about products, he's thinking about economy, which is what the Panama Canal is. It's a shipping route.
Yeah. Well, it is that, but it's also more than that. And
military.
Well, this is why I'm more of a, like, no, I definitely think the United States should control this. And one of the reasons is the United States is the country that built this. So the idea of the Panama Canal goes all the way back to like the 1500s. The French landed there or somebody, and they're like, we should build a canal. The first real effort happened after that. You know, the Suez Canal between the Mediterranean and the Red Sea, mm-hmm. and that changed the shipping route. Because before any of these canals were built, you know, the only way to get to these...
Go all the way around the Horn.
Was to go around, go around the south of Africa. Or if you're going from the United States or if you're going the other way, you got to go around the tip of South America. And those waters are dangerous. It adds a bunch of time to your journey and all this other stuff. Well, in the Suez Canal, they built a sea level canal through there. The French did. And they're like, why couldn't we do that in Panama? Well, Panama has mountains. So they went out there, they tried it, they failed. And Teddy Roosevelt actually spearheaded the effort to get this canal built. So what the United States did, what their plan was they're like, we're going to dam up this river and create this lake. And then we're going to create a series of locks. And if you're from St. Louis, you're familiar with what locks do. They change the level of the boat. It's basically a boat elevator.
Have you ever been up to the lock and dam near Alton?
Yeah, for sure.
It's neat.
Yeah. And so you watch the boats come in, they raise it up. And so they've done this, and they built this series of locks so that you could cut, I forget how many months and miles and fuel costs off of this. So it's huge. Like something like 40% of the world's shipping goes through the Panama Canal. What was the United States' responsibility? At the time the United States was building it, Panama was part of, I think it was Colombia, and they were trying to get independence. And so the United States supported Panamanian independence so they could build this canal, and they got this lease. And it was real tenuous between the Panamanian government because there's a lot of turmoil and turnover. But the United States built it. Tens of thousands of American lives were lost in the building process.
Wow, no kidding.
Because of mosquitoes. It's one of the most deadly building projects. It was like $327 million to build it in 1904 to 1913. So you're talking almost a 10-year period.
With inflation, that's probably almost like $500 million
now. But it's a big, expensive project. But the thing about it is our big competitor, and this is why I'm like, let's get Panama, the canal, because our big competitor is China. And when you talk about shipping, you've got to get ship not just from the West Coast, you got to ship from the East Coast too. So if you don't control it for shipping reasons, then if China takes control of the Panama Canal, because right now
that was my question for you.
Panama owns it.
So Panama owns it because we ceded ownership back to it. And I actually read a little bit about this. It was during the Carter-Reagan era that this became a big thing.
It's like from like 1977 or something.
And Reagan made it a big issue because we had been losing a lot overseas. We had just had a lot of like negative international news for America. And he made this a big part of his 1980 campaign. It's one of the reasons that he got the nomination is that America said, why are we giving everything away for nothing?
Right. History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes.
It sure does.
We're losing overseas. Uh-huh. That could be a Trump campaign. But China has since moved into that area, and because Panama can't really afford to maintain it, they've been getting help from other countries. Well, if China takes over the Panama Canal, tariffs don't matter because they could just not let U.S. ships through there, and that cripples the U.S. as far as negotiations through economy. The Panama Canal was so influential that Panama actually adopted the dollar as its official currency.
Wow.
So you buy things in the U.S. dollar in Panama. And then, like, the Panama.
You know, it's funny. A lot of Latin America is like that, where even countries that have their own currency, they're like, yeah, we'll take dollars, though, because it's more stable.
Yeah. But if that happens, then the dollar becomes less influential. But the other side of this is, too, and I look at this, and I'm always thinking about this. China wants to be the boss. And the United States is a boss. And there's never really ever been a flip from one superpower to another without an armed conflict. Even like the United States and Russia, when it was the Soviet Union, there were proxy wars. The United States has the biggest navy in the world, but they still have to get their navy quickly and efficiently from one side of the world to the other. And this canal is vital to that. I mean, it's the idea that this canal, people like build ships to its specifications so their ships will fit through the canal. Now they widened it in 2016, so now bigger ships can get through. But like the battleships, the Iowa-class battleships, the aircraft carriers, all of those things were built so they would fit through the canal because it's like the U.S. interstate system. The idea of the interstate system is you get military from one part of the country to the other fast. It's not for you to travel.
It doesn't surprise me that China's doing this.
Yeah. Well, China, if I'm China, I'm going after it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense for their strategy, but they're doing this all over the world. Mm-hmm. They're going into every nation, and not just, you know, impoverished nations.
Right.
They're going into nations that... In 2012 or 13, my wife and I were thinking about having kids. And we're like, okay, I think that's, we're probably going to start trying to have kids soon. And you're like, how in the world is this playing in the Panama Canal? Well,
no, I want to hear it.
We decided that we were going to go on one big vacation before we had kids. We decided to go to Iceland. We did. And it was a great time because the dollar was high and the Icelandic whatever currency is was really low because a lot of times if you visit that country, it's reverse. Like your dollar doesn't go as far there. Well, at that time it did. So when we visited, we were able to kind of do a lot. We stayed at some Airbnbs. Now, we were pretty poor, so we were able to just do the vacation. It wasn't like we were rich on vacation. We were just able to do it. And one of the things that when we talked to Icelanders a lot about, there was a common theme that they said they hated their government because their government had sold out in this. This was 2012, 13. They had sold out to China because China had come along and bought up all of their energy infrastructure because it's so tempting for these, not impoverished, but that's a smaller government, obviously, not a huge economy. Somebody comes to you and just waves money at you and goes, hey, how about a whole bunch of money for you and your country? You go, oh man, this could help me get elected the next election down the road. So you take their money. Every nation's been doing this. China has footholds all over the world. So for Trump to bring up the Panama Canal, that tells me that he is forward thinking. He's got the right people around him who are advising him well to say, look, we need to be thinking about this. Nobody was thinking about it. Nobody was thinking about
this
issue.
Nobody mentioned Greenland until he mentioned it.
And so I'm glad when he mentions these things, not because I know how it's going to turn out, not because I know the backstory about all of it, just like you just had a great backstory on all the Panama Canal there. I appreciate that. But to know that your leaders are thinking about those things for you, that's why you have a representative doing that, because that's their job.
Well, in all honesty, too, with me, it never popped into my mind that the Panama Canal would even be an issue until Trump said something.
Exactly. To know that he's forward thinking and getting ahead of these things is a comfort to me. We are at the top of the hour. More breaking news ahead with speeches coming up from the House floor.